On this week's episode of Work Trends, we're talking about the future of work and on-demand talent with Carissa McClusack. Welcome to the Work Trends podcast from Talent Culture. I'm your host, Megan Ambiro. Every week, I interview interesting people and brands who are reimagining work. For more information, be sure to check us out at talentculture.com and join us live on Twitter every Wednesday at 1:30 p.m. Eastern using the hashtag WorkTrends. Today's guest is Carissa McClusack. She's an HR tech veteran who worked for CareerBuilder for many years. 3 years ago, she founded Tiller, the tech that automates the recruitment process for job seekers and companies. Her goal is to shrink the skill gap and eliminate bias in hiring. Welcome to Work Trends, Carissa.
Thank you so much for having me. It's an absolute pleasure to be here.
So listen, what's happening? You have been in the HR tech space for a while. What inspired you to launch Tiller?
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to share. I have definitely been in the space for some time and have watched search technology really break, if you will, not to be overly dramatic, but from my standpoint, the search technology that's available in mass in the market today really doesn't work well for the new workforce that we have. And so we were inspired to help fix that. And we created a new search technology, as you so kindly described, Tiller. The other inspiring pieces that really motivated us to dedicate our lives to Tiller, if you will, is that recruitment also just takes too long. So by automating it with a new search technology, we're able to shorten it and provide a better experience, of course, for companies, but also for workers. And candidate experience is very important to us. And lastly, I always talk about three different real areas of motivation. We want to eliminate bias in hiring. Sometimes, even in an unintended fashion, humans can be biased when making decisions. And so we've again designed a technology that really fixes the search technology, shortens that cycle from sometimes weeks or even months to moments and hours, and then really just eradicate bias. Our technology renders it impossible in the space, if you will. So those are really the three areas that were our key motivations and what we're solving in the marketplace.
Tiller, tell us, what inspired this name? I must know.
So you'll find quickly that I'm one for very direct candor. So I'm going to tell the truth. I have a great core investor and principal in our company. We were working on a name. We had a technology and a plan to change the world before we had a name. And he has a jockey, Bobby Tiller, that never loses a race. He was at a horse race and called me with this idea of the name Tiller. And we started to talk about sailboats and have sailboats have tillers. So don't think the type of tiller where you've got seeds and you're planting in the ground, although that would make a ton of sense for our brand.
Right. That's what I was actually wondering.
Yeah, that's what everyone should rightly wonder. But it's actually the tiller on a sailboat that allows both the company and the worker to pull that direction as we talk about skills and how skills play a role. And so when you look at Tiller, which we again believe empowers everyone to make better decisions and really navigate their own future, you'll see a lot of aqua symbolism. So not only our colors, but the way our logo overlaps is meant to be waves and so on and so forth. We've got a brand, what's the word I'm looking for? Mascot, Tilly, who's a submarine. And I'll be very candid now, there was a panic moment as we were working on our early DNA of do submarines have tillers? And we were Googling and trying to figure out whether submarines really had tillers, but fortunately they did. So it was inspired by Bobby Tiller, the jockey that never loses a horse race.
Shout outs to Bobby. That's way cool.
Thanks for the fun question.
Yeah. I know one thing that you talk a lot about is the difference between job skills and job titles. Tell us what you mean by that.
Absolutely. I mentioned kind of harshly prior that we believe search technology is broken. And the reason we believe it's broken is because it still relies on the title as the main building block of recruitment. And what we've learned is that titles can actually be limiting and screen people out rather than screen them in, which is the intention. What we've found in the new workforce, where people oftentimes have many different careers within the longevity of their overall career, is that skills are really a lot more telling and important and indicative of what someone not only is great at, but may want to do. And so the technology that we've built doesn't look at gender, doesn't look at age, doesn't look at years of experience. It doesn't look at titles, which some people think is so weird, but rather it looks at skills and proficiency. And if I might just make it really simple, what it allows us to do is reallocate talent differently. With current search technology, if you're looking for a customer service person, you're looking for someone with that title. But with Tiller's technology, and when you match on skills, you really look at people as an amalgamation of their skills. And what we find is, let's say Charlie did job A and job B, and he gained skills 1 through 3 at job A, and then skills 4, 5, and 6 in job B, but he's never done job C. But job C simply requires skill 1 and 5, which he has from his past prior 2 roles. Our search technology will actually serve Charlie that job. And if he accepts, because the decision's up to him, we'll measure the outcome of that reallocation. And if we got it right and it's thumbs up in all directions, that's when our algorithm starts to really learn and become true machine learning about how you can look at skills and reallocate talent in really effective ways. So you blow people's minds because you say, hey, did you realize that you're qualified to do this? And they have so many more opportunities right in their backyard. And at the same time, you give employers a totally new fishing pool, if you will, of talent and a way to connect to people that they might not have otherwise considered.
So basically what you're telling us here at the hashtag Work Trends community, and if you're listening in, share your thoughts on this. We are actually talking about bypassing a job interview altogether. Talk about disruptive.
Indeed. And so one of the reasons that we've focused on the gig economy as we started to introduce this technology to business leaders and to workers is because we do believe that it's easier to start to make this mind shift and say we can believe in the data, we can believe in an algorithm without an interview for jobs with start and end dates. What we found is that when the technology proves successful, people are willing to look at it in different forms for longer term jobs, but it is a big hop. What we found is that interviews can be really misleading. People are great persuasive communicators oftentimes. And although an interview is a great way to get to know a person and learn about their communication style, it's often truly not indicative, nor is their title, of how they're going to perform in the role. So what we've done is replace that traditional interview with your first few hours or days on site in a temporary fashion based on skills to really see how someone performs. Also, to make our companies feel very comforted, in addition to skill profiling through our app, we also ask workers to, of course, pass a background check. And then we do speak with every single worker on the phone. We've talked with over 30,000 people about their skills, about their ambitions, about what type of jobs they'd like to see, what would really inspire them, and also help them to understand how the app best works. So someone other than a computer does speak to the workers for now, although hint, hint, we might have built a chatbot behind some of that to automate even further.
Oh, I suspect you may have. So do us a favor, walk us through exactly how a candidate gets a job in this scenario.
Absolutely. The first thing that someone does is download the app. From a worker perspective, we're of course live in the iPhone and Android, I was going to say in the Apple store. But the next thing is to input your skills. So you're self-vetting yourself. And it's fun. We've been called the Tinder of recruitment, the Match.com of recruitment, because you're swiping left and right and picking from a basket of skills that explodes and helps to guide you so that the information is stable on both sides of the fence in a way to pull out as many skills as you can. When you're done doing what you're going to do for the day, maybe you've gone through in your mind, you know, your last couple jobs. We then ask you to trigger your background check, which all happens in app. We have a partner by the name of Good Hire on the West Coast.
Oh, sure.
Oh, you're familiar.
Awesome. I am. Shout outs to Good Hire, my friends. I haven't talked to them in a while, actually.
We partnered with them very early on as we were building. So they've been great partners. And our background checks, as you know, Good Hire is awesome, highly confidential and quick, come back pretty quickly. At that point, as mentioned, traditionally, we then ask you to schedule about a 10 to 15 minute phone call where we go over the things that I mentioned prior, really with a focus, believe it or not, you know, people are always saying, well, you know, in an interview, everybody lies. We find quite the opposite. People are so humble, or they've been trained not to put jobs like, hey, I work the customer service counter at Giant Eagle or Stop and Shop, depending on what part of the country you're in, you know, during college to pay bills. But I was told if I want to be an engineer, leave that off my resume. What we find is the more skills you put in, the more relevant you become for the more opportunities. Mm-hmm. So really during those conversations, we're encouraging people to go back into the app after we've learned a little bit more about them. And make their skill profile even more robust. After that, you're a tiller and you literally put the app in your pocket, which is some kind of interesting to people because we're so used to the behavior of searching on a job board to find a job or logging in somewhere to see if we've been pinged. What happens is you literally get a push notification on your phone that says you've been matched to a job. Here is the employer. Here are the details about the job. Obviously, users at this point, I skipped a step, have input availability, how far they want to travel, all of these things so that we can serve really relevant opportunities that fit their schedule. And if you like that job, you accept it. There's no additional interview with the employer. They really trust the tiller process that we walked through and talked about a bit, as crazy as it is. And so over time, that trust point obviously becomes higher and higher. Based on simple results. Workers then are able to log in and out of the application when they're on site for a worker. So all of their time tracking is kept at Tiller. And then you may know our other partner, they were actually just acquired by PayPal, Hyperwallet, also on the West Coast, allows us to pay trusted workers same day or traditionally, you know, if you're new to the Tiller community and just establishing your workflow weekly. And so we then are able to help you offboard back into the community and stack your next job. And it allows people to try a number of different things or really stick to the focal areas that they're excited about pursuing. It's up to them. There's no penalty for declining a role. It's 100% up to the job seeker. So in that way, one of the most disruptive pieces is that we flip the decision making from the employer, who simply says, I need this many tillers for this length of time with this skill set, to the job seeker or candidate or tiller community member or worker. There's so many wonderful names for these people with awesome skills, and they get to decide when and where they want to work.
Okay, so who aren't you serving then? Because I know your technology is basically catering to people in the gig economy. Talk to us about who you're not serving yet.
Kind of as we saw the evolution with job boards, I'll date myself a bit now, but in the early 2000s when we were really moving job search away from the newspaper, if anyone can remember that.
You have no idea what you're talking about.
I know, to a digital format. I do remember customers. I spent a good portion of my career at CareerBuilder, and I do remember customers looking at me and saying, are you crazy? I will never place a job online. People go to the classifieds to find jobs. That's how we've always found jobs. So kind of like we saw with this type of adoption, although it's moving a bit faster, we're not working with people to hire their next vice president of sales or their next executive leader. We are working as far up the chain to help organizations with consultant level sales individuals and customer success, you know, really customer interfacing positions. But we started helping companies with warehousing, stock rooms, logistics, data entry, hospitality. And our goal is to earn trust and move up. But where we're not serving are in more sophisticated areas where people not only want to interview, but go out to lunch a few times and really see how someone interacts. And it's beyond the skill profile. And we certainly understand there's a space for that. Again, not as much of a hint as the chatbot I talked about, but something just in full candor that we're exploring is partnering with personality or testing organizations so that we can become a technology for, let's say, a senior engineer, where skills need to be tested in a different way, not just vetted and skilled on the back end. And so there are some ways that we can move up chain, but it's a really good question. And some of those more sophisticated areas we're not servicing today.
So to get back to gig workers, I mean, one of the huge challenges people face is getting health insurance if they're not a full-time employee. How are you helping people with healthcare right now?
Personally, I spend some time working on the Hill and really advocating for a portable benefit bill that Mark Warner and Todd Young are championing. To bring some money and research to the space so that as a country, we can look for ways to build a sustainable ecosystem. At Tiller, because we want to get, you know, roll up our sleeves and be gritty in terms of the solutions we can bring to our workers immediately, we were really honored, in addition to partnering with Good Hire and Hyperwallet early on, to partner with Anthem, Blue Cross Blue Shield. And last year, we offered health insurance through Anthem to gig workers. It was a program that was much like a program that a W-2 or full-time worker would access through their company. And it wasn't the best offering, although it was the best intent of starting to bring solutions to market. What's been really motivating and exciting, and I credit Anthem with an innovative attitude and appetite for exploration, is that Anthem has now developed what they're calling an intermittent health insurance program, and they're debuting it through the Tiller platform. It'll be live in the fall, and this is an insurance program that will be available eventually outside of Tiller as well. We're just testing it together to gig workers that mimics the patterns of how gig workers work and recognizes that you may work for one company or another company, hence the word portable benefit. It follows the person and not the company that you work at. And also that you may have lapse in work and have to pay more for insurance at some point and not have an income for insurance at another point. And so this looks at a way to really smooth those periods out. And if you do have to have a lapse in insurance, you're not kicked off a platform like you are in a traditional area, but rather it's something that's planned for, you know, one or two times a year and really works to fit that. So there'll be work to do. There'll be adjustments to make, but we're really excited to do that work together, start to help people have access to better insurance. Because right now, a gig worker truly has to be savvy and have the cash to either go to the exchange, which seems like there's an unstable future, go find a private insurer and take out a private policy for themselves and their family. And without a company discount, it's almost unbearable.
Ridiculous. So I'm so glad you're working on this. And, you know, we need to change what's happening here for gig workers. It's just not fair, basically.
It's not. All. They contribute oftentimes more to the economy than a W-2 worker in times of hours worked. And we're not allowed to subsidize. So one of the reasons, and I'll stop right after this, I promise not to turn this into an episode about politics in any way. But one of the reasons that we're working so hard from a legislative angle is that I'm not allowed to supplement Tiller workers' health insurance, given the current legislation. And I'll just stop there rather than diving into it. So even if we wanted to, which we'd be open to with our profits, pay for a portion of this health insurance program right now for gig workers, that's not something that a brand like Tiller can do. And so we really need to change the legislation as well and look for a sustainable system, since I believe this is going to be part of the new workforce for a long time, that allows people to work and save for their family and have access to, you know, not just health insurance, but training and development and other soft benefits we take for granted when we're, you know, working in a full-time W-2 traditional environment.
Well, we'll definitely be tuning into these developments. I love that you're taking a very holistic approach. I think it's smart. So let's talk about this from the employer side. I think there's a lot of misconceptions out there about the gig economy right now. What do you want HR people, hiring managers, to know about hiring talent for short-term roles?
What a kind and important question also. Thank you so much. You know, I think that there is a misconception that gig work applies to either younger people or a certain level of low-skilled people or people that couldn't get W-2 jobs. And it's really quite the opposite. If we might go back to holistic approach for just a second, what's really going on and what I'd love for HR people to hear and take away is that people are choosing to work differently and they have more options of how to work. And they're starting to develop new motivations for work. We've had a real shift in the culture of our current workforce in terms of how they're motivated and engaging in something that they're interested in and learning and growing and having flexibility have risen to the top of these values, even over making, you know, another dollar or two per hour or another $20,000 per year. And so, you know, again, what I'd love for everyone to hear is these aren't different workers. These are the same workers that were taking W-2 jobs yesterday that are choosing to work in a different way because there's new work, you know, new systems that allow you to work differently. And what we see at Tiller is that the gig economy, although some people absolutely choose to work as giggers, and that's what they're doing. They go from one project to the next. They work at Tiller in professional services. They drive Uber to and from work to Tiller and do a little Postmates for some exercise. It's awesome. We love it. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people also are checking out different projects, looking for companies that they want to land at home. And at Tiller, you know, we very quickly realized that we had to and it's not bad because it creates an additional revenue stream, but have a solution for clients to keep Tillers, for clients to keep Tillers that they fell in love with and for Tillers to make that decision if they wanted to move into a W-2 role. So we see it as transient, not that the people are transient, but that they're giggers for a while, then they're back in the traditional workforce, then they're back giggers. And it's really important because you just won't have enough W-2 workers hire in a year or two from now, if you're only focused on that traditional segment. So we could go on, but I think companies are learning they can plan their recruitment strategies differently, truly around their work strategy with these new options, understanding everyone doesn't want to work full-time and likes to go from project to project. I mean, they work full-time, but in incremental projects, they don't have to go through as many misaligned expectations to ramp up during high seasons, for example, and then unfortunately let people go. There are other solutions to that now too. So we're starting to see companies think differently, but those I think are some of the things I'd love for people to hear.
When you look at the HR tech landscape, so exciting, right? What are you most excited about right now? I'm curious.
So many things. Believe it or not, I think we're starting to see a lot of movement in HR tech rallying around not just the employer experience, but the candidate experience for the first time. But if I had to pick one, or if you'll let me two, I would say the first is data. I think we've learned in so many other industries the power of data, and we're finally starting to collect and aggregate data at Tiller. As you were so kind to allow me to share, it's about skill data. But as an industry, we're starting to collect data, aggregate it, analyze it, and map it to different outcomes at a higher rate. And so I start to imagine, you know, if we right now can figure out that someone that's never worked in customer service but has had two other jobs actually outperforms people with a customer service title 9 out of 10 times, think about the power of what we'll be able to do with that data in 2 years from now. You know, I see a world where we'll be able to be very intentional and, again, really enrich experiences for people. And I guess the other thing I'm really excited about is there seems to be, I mean, there's always a good, healthy, competitive landscape when it comes to the talent market. But I am starting to see a lot of collaboration toward big things like solving the skill gap or creating total solutions. So, I'm excited by the consolidation we've seen in the industry. Some of it's been really untraditional, like TaskRabbit being purchased by IKEA or ADP, a payroll company, purchasing WorkMarket and the technology solutions that will come out of that type of innovation over the next couple years, and more consolidation we'll see excites me too, because I just think there are technologies out there we haven't even imagined yet that will be solving important problems pretty soon.
You and I have something in common, right? We both have worked in the talent space for many years and in different roles, of course, and we both have our own business. What have you learned about hiring talent from your experience as a founder of a company?
The number one thing that I've learned, whether it's for a one-day gig job or for your most important executive role, is you really have to hire people that want to be there, that want to do the job, that understand the job, and truly want to be there to do the work. And so that's always my number one, I guess, criteria, is that I just want to know that people that are going to work at Tiller, for example, want to work at Tiller. And I think we've expressed that in our technology by allowing the worker to make the choice. And, you know, if you're interviewing, if you still have them, that is, I think that sharing as much honest information about the experience is as critical as the information that you learn. And so, you know, I've learned that titles really don't indicate what someone can do or what they're willing to do in the least. It's really that desire and passion to be part of whatever project or mission or job you're working on and hiring for.
But the job's really important. I've learned that as somebody who's very aspirational in my life and business, and anyone who works for me or with me knows this. How important is the job, though, and those skills? Yes, somebody can come in and say they're willing to do this, but at the end of the day, it's really about that task. Talk to us a little bit about that.
In terms of being qualified to do a task? Absolutely. So, of course, someone has to be able to perform the job or be a quick study if you have the time and training materials to teach someone how to do the job. And so, we believe, and I believe, that there are certainly good conversations that you can have around experience that someone has had, or getting an illustration of how they've solved certain problems or approaches in the past. So again, if you're in a live interview, I think those are good areas to focus on to really pull out that know-how, not just, can you do this? How do you do it? But you know, I don't want to sound so cliche to say share a time with me when, but if you can really dive into someone's experience and start to feel how they've approached problems and what the outcomes have been, I think that that is a good way to make sure that someone's actually qualified. At Tiller, we use Tiller. I mean, we have a database, if you could think of it, of skills that have new neurons or connections that have been created between them that indicate when someone's done this, this, and this, there is a high factual data percentage and outcome that they're going to be able to do this. And so that competency is predicted with almost uncertainty. And then it really becomes the interview is the first few days, or again, if it's a more complex role, a few weeks or months or whatever it may be of work. But in a true interview fashion, prior to any type of, as everyone's calling it, blind hiring, you know, I think that experiential interviewing is really critical to make sure that someone's competent.
Ditto. I think people can tell you anything you want to hear. So that's, you know, it's a fine line.
It is. And if you're really trying to get to know someone, you didn't ask me this and you're feel free to cut me off, but if you're really trying to get to know someone and do a cultural analysis, I still swear by the server test. You go out to lunch or dinner or breakfast or coffee, and you see how the person interacts with the server and the people around them. Are they able to focus on you and drive their interest forward and ask good questions while still engaging with others? And do they treat people with decency? Do they treat the stranger that they bump into in the same way that you would want them to treat a colleague in the hall or in this day and age on Skype or Slack? you know, what does it feel like when people really start to ask me about, but what about cultural interviewing? I'm like, listen, if you're hiring for a full-time job, take the person out to eat.
There you go.
And now, you know, my last name is my husband's and I'm just a true Italian over here. You take them to eat. That's what you do.
I love it. Carissa, thank you so much for stopping by today. I look forward to seeing you in person and continuing this conversation. Anyone who is rethinking traditional hiring processes, my hat's off to you. Thanks for listening to Work Trends from Talent Culture. If you enjoyed this episode, subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. And I'd be really grateful if you took a moment to leave a rating and review on iTunes. It helps other people find our show. If you know someone who would enjoy listening, please share it with them. You can learn more about the future of work at talentculture.com.